Don't bet against a better team at home. I don't care who got it.
Three massages.
Oh, this is
Say Adlich one more time. You can't say stuff like this on podcast, all right?
Hello and welcome to the Alligator Sports Podcast. This is the show for Wednesday, February 3rd, 2010. I'm your host, Adam Berry, and joining me today, another former Florida volleyball beat writer, Kyle Maestri.
How's everyone doing out there, live from the Lemron Center?
That's right. And the reason I said that you're a former Florida volleyball beat writer is because we have a very special guest in our makeshift studio here in the Lemron Center, Florida volleyball coach Mary Wise. Mary, say hi. Thanks.
Hello, fellas. Thank you very much for coming by.
Thanks so much for coming on the podcast. We appreciate it.
It's certainly the most special guest we've had and will have for a while to come here. So let's just start off. First question, what have you been up to this offseason? How have things been going since the season ended back in December?
Well, the players took a few weeks off, two total weeks off post the season and during the winter break, and they started back in the weight room right when classes started in January. And during this time of year, we have 2 hours total that we're allowed to work with the players in the gym. Then they have 6 hours that they can work with Matt Delancey. And this is there are two key parts of the year where we see major strength gains. One is now, between now and the end of beginning of January to the end of February, and the other is in the summer. So the players have been working really, really hard in the weight room. One, getting healthy. Two, when I say healthy, you know, in certain areas that they may have that need attention, whether it's a weakness of their own, that they're getting healthier and stronger. We had them all. One of the beauties of being at the University of Florida is the access we have to the bioanalysis lab. And so what we had is the players, and we've done this now for the past couple of years, where the players are actually being tested for our attackers in terms of all with the analysis that their film analysis they can do and determining where we can get them stronger, and a lot of it injury prevention, but part of it also is enhancing their skills. So a lot of work in terms of prehab, post-rehab, and getting ready for next fall.
Is there anything in particular they've been working on in this sort of all this training that's been going on in the limited time you do have with them? What do you try to work on?
It's varied by position and player. I can tell you in terms of a player like Kelly Murphy, we've really worked on her setting and attacking the second ball. Kelly showed at the end of the season her talents, just the scratching the surface of what she could do running a 5-1. Mm-hmm. And so we're working in her on that area. With our middle hitters in terms of getting better at hitting off 1 foot, hitting the slide behind her. So really it's been by position, by player.
You talk about having to get all the players stronger. How do you think it differs from taking in a volleyball player from high school and getting them ready to play on the college level as opposed to maybe like a football or basketball where there's going to be a lot of weight training in high school and maybe they don't have as far to go sometimes?
They may not change as much physically as a high school senior football player to, you know, the first time they go out on the field, but there are certainly a lot of changes and development that has to go through for that jump from high school to college. Just like our players that have left college and gone to play professionally, there is another leap that happens. Mm-hmm. And so the game is just so much faster and the players are so much more physical in college than they are in high school. And understanding that, how much quicker the game is played and how much stronger you have to be. So the time they spend in the weight room is invaluable. You know what you'd love? I mean, ideally, you'd redshirt them all. Mm. And so that you could, you know, you'd have that year. Look at Chrissy Jekyll. What a benefit it's been for her to have redshirted her freshman year. So that, you know, here she was a starter that first year redshirt and so much stronger than she was when she came in.
Mm-hmm. So you mentioned Kelly Murphy already and, you know, kind of the move from the 6'2 to the 5'1 for her. Do you see her being strictly a setter for you guys going forward, because obviously she can do it all on the court?
She can do it all, and I think what we're leaning toward, working towards is the 5-1 being the primary offense, but with the ability when Chanel Brown, the signed setter coming in from Arizona, that we could go in and out. Chanel's a great defensive player. She's going to be on the court whether she's setting or not. But the ability to move in and out of that offense based on the opponent and what we're trying to do, and that's really taking advantage of Kelly's strength. But Kelly playing at the next level, our USA Women's National Team playing professionally, and she's got the best chance of going the furthest in setting.
What's the ceiling for her? I mean, she's when I covered the team, she was a freshman, obviously. And, you know, I had watched some of the older teams with Marcy Hampton, Angie McGinnis, those type people. And I said to Phil, who also works with us, who covered the team when they were on the team, that I thought Kelly Murphy could end up being the best player that Florida's had. I mean, do you think that that's certainly in play for her?
Well, what Kelly has going for her, you start with length. She's 6'2", and then you add the fact that she's left-handed and a really, really good athlete. I mean, those are good things to start with. And she's just more... She's a more physical player than Angie McGinnis was. Angie, you know, an All-American setter who had a great career, but wasn't nearly as physical, as strong. She wasn't built the same as Kelly. So Kelly has a lot going for her. Understand the 5-1. The last time she ran that offense was when she was like in eighth grade. I mean, everyone's always needed her to kill balls. And so some of the things that she's learning, those setters that come into college, they've been doing that for years. So that's why the fun part is there's so much more ahead of her. You ask what her top end is. I don't know what it is. Mm-hmm. And, you know, those are the players that are really, you know, the special ones that she's going to get a whole lot better these last 2 years. But her top end's going to be when she's late in her 20s, early 30s, hitting the prime of her volleyball life as professionals do. Obviously hoping that she remains healthy. Mm-hmm. The question will it be on the beach? Will it be indoors? Mm-hmm. Will it be on our national team? Will it be professionally? Will it be a combination? We'll see. All I know is we'll be a big fan of hers and watching afterwards.
Absolutely.
What was the adjustment like for her and for the rest of the team going from that 6-2 to the 5-1 near the end of the season?
Well, we would have liked to have done it earlier, but there were so many dominoes that had to happen. To run a 5-1 effectively, you've got to have a player be able to kill the ball behind the setter. That's that 1 foot takeoff that we call a backslide. And it is very difficult to defend. That's why everybody runs it. But we've got players in our middles, like Cassandra Anderson, who came to us without that being their best. They were best off 2 feet in front, just opposite of Kelsey Bowers, whose weakness was 2 feet in front of the setter, but was great 1 foot behind. No telling what Kelsey could have done with a healthy back her senior year. Right. But so we had to develop that ability, and we knew our strength was Lauren Bledsoe, but Lauren played right side. So it was Callie Rivers' development that was really the lead domino. As soon as Callie, who had never played right side in her life, felt better playing right side, then we could make that change. Having never played football, maybe it's not the right analogy, but I don't think it's quite like moving an offensive tackle from the right to the left. I get a lot more involved in that. I think it's like playing two totally different positions in basketball. Can you go from a power forward to a shooting guard? Some can, but even more drastic, can you go from a point guard to the four position? Okay, those are two pretty distinct different positions. That's what going from left to right is in volleyball.
So obviously the physical change, you don't have to grow 6 inches, but as far as your responsibility on the court, it's just you're doing two completely different things on the court.
That's exactly right. Okay. I mean, blocking is blocking and hitting is hitting, but you're doing it from the opposite sides. Mm-hmm. You're doing it reverse. And there are some players that, Lauren Bledsoe played in a club program where they were trained out of Long Beach, California. Lauren had to play all three front row positions growing up and in that club team. I think it's one of the reasons why that club team has won multiple national championships, but it also has helped us. You think about it, Lauren has played in three NCAA tournaments. She's played in it as a right side, she's played in it as a middle, and she played it as a left side when Marcy Hampton tore her Achilles. We couldn't do that with Lauren without that training. And I think all college coaches kind of feel this way. You've got our time sometimes for the players it doesn't seem limited. But as a college coach, you just feel it's so limited. 2 hours in the off season, how much can you get done at that time? I remember a player we had from Europe years ago who said, this was Ajahn, who was a first-team, three-time first-team All-American, a great player. And she said, in Europe, they would train for 3 months and play for 9 months. She said, here, we do just opposite. She says, why would we train for nine just to play 3 months out of the year? And there's a lot of truth to that. And that's why volleyball players, and I think true of other sports, they are not peaking in college by any stretch. It's all about, you know, what happens in the big picture of their career. We just get them for a short period of time.
And we talked a lot about Kelly Murphy, obviously, who's maybe the next great player, or she's been very good so far. But Elise Cusack just wrapped up her career with you. Another all-timer. Her jersey will go up in the rafters, I assume, after a year or two here. So just talk about her career, your relationship with her, what she's meant to the program, all that kind of good stuff.
Well, I think, you know, the legacy any player wants to leave is to be hard to replace. And no question, Elise will be very difficult for us to replace because of the fact, you know, she played 4 years here, having started graduating early from PK Young and starting a semester early. And she just came to us with such a knack for tracking the ball, anticipating. I mean, she played that libero position like somebody who would own the all-time career dig record in the SEC. And that's how she left our program, obviously leaving a huge mark, not only in digging, but also serve receive. I mean, Elise was terrific at that. We feel very fortunate that we have in Taylor Unruh, the high school senior who signed with us back in the fall out of Muncie Burris, Indiana, a player who's played in a two-player passing position. She plays outside hitter. And if Taylor were 6 feet, she might be the best outside hitter in the country because her arm swing is fantastic. But she's not. She's 5'6" and has so much game and is such a great passer that I understand we're replacing a four-year starter with a freshman, but if ever somebody could help, you know, shorten that gap, it could be Taylor. We'll have our growing pains, but Taylor is going to be terrific. For Elise, she's now in California, is going to try and make a run on the beach circuit, play a lot of doubles, play on the grass. She wants to keep playing. There's a lot of volleyball left ahead of her. The problem is there's not as many professional jobs in the libero position as there is in the outside hitter.
You mentioned the beach volleyball thing a couple times already. Let's go ahead and get into that. Okay. You're a big proponent of the sand volleyball, everything that's happening with that. You want to just talk about that?
I am a big proponent because I think it's a great opportunity for more girls to play the sport of volleyball. Mm-hmm. Whether it's indoors or outdoors, it's still volleyball. And from a media standpoint, fans, nothing has caught a buzz like beach volleyball has. That's true of all women's sports. I saw a study where they were interviewing companies and people that put money towards sponsorship and promotion, and they thought the greatest growth sport in women's athletics was beach volleyball. That's more than the LPGA. That's more than the WNBA. So it's not just the volleyball people who think the sport has a lot of potential. These are people with the money. And you know, you grow a sport with TV, but you also grow it with interest and participation. That's happening throughout the country. There was a lot of interest early on until it looked like this could become an NCAA sport. And there were schools that thought, we're not in a position to add sand volleyball anytime soon. This could really hurt our recruiting efforts. Will the better players be playing sand volleyball and not the indoor game? There's still a lot of questions to be answered. But even though the University of Florida is not in a position to add volleyball, sand volleyball, anytime soon, we just added lacrosse. I don't think anybody in the SEC is going to add it in the next year or so. But we didn't think we should prevent other schools from doing it. And what's ironic is that the most interest is coming from the non-BCS schools. Those are schools without revenue-generating football and whose numbers are skewed in terms of gender equity. and don't have the great resources to add more women's sports, but because they have football, their numbers are way off. They got to add sports. At Florida, we've been able to add, you know, you have soccer and softball and lacrosse. Your numbers begin to balance themselves.
Right.
But without money, that's hard to do. You can add sand volleyball. It's a lot less expensive than a lot of sports. And if a player plays both indoor and outdoor, they can count for both. Now you get those, like, track numbers.
Right.
They run indoor track and outdoor. Now they double counters. So really, from a business standpoint, for an AD trying to balance their numbers for gender equity, which, by the way, is a law, it's a good sport to
so
add.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe not always followed.
Exactly.
But as I understand, and we had a chance to meet with the number two guy in the NCAA a year ago, and the question was asked, what do you think about sand volleyball? And his answer was, you know, that with the change in administration in Washington, D.C., there's a feeling that Title IX will be given more attention.
Mm.
And certainly not following Title IX. That just wasn't the case for 8 years prior. And so now, just in our first year, we think that there will be more attention, that it's a federal law. And if your school doesn't provide as many opportunities for females as you do for males, you're breaking the law. You got to do something. And sand volleyball may be a cheap, inexpensive answer. Oh, and by the way, it's a lot of fun to play. So I think it's got great potential. How about that?
So you answered my first question, which is you'll have players that will play both, and that's cool with you as a coach, something that you'd like to see. They come in, they play sand, and they play on the court.
Right.
My second question is, if you're saying, you know, Florida's not in a position to add sand volleyball, what exactly do you mean by that? What's holding, like, a Florida back, a school who has tons of money, tons of, you know, budget wrapped up?
Well, understand, I mean, that we do have an issue.
If Florida
with
can't
it.
Add it, who can?
Yeah, well, we have those that have to add it.
Right.
But the economy, the state of the economy, that's reality. And we kind of, I wish we could have done it like 5 years prior before everything tanked.
Mm.
And the reality is, on campus, we have programs being cut and professors being laid off. I mean, it's a tough time on university campuses. It's just really not the right time to be adding more sports.
Right.
Do I think it's going to happen? Yeah, eventually. I think my sense is it's going to be like an SEC-wide, that the ADs are going to go, you know, that hopefully we're going to rebound from where we are. Things are going to be in a better situation. The ADs in the league are going to go, you know what? This could be, we could really make a run here doing this before anybody else.
What do you think is the timetable on that?
You know, that's hard to say. It's not going to, it won't start as a sport until 2011. It was pushed back a year. And there are a lot of questions that have to be answered in terms of rules and recruiting rules is a big one. And what they don't want is, and this was a good decision on all parties, is that they don't want schools stockpiling indoor players by putting them all on sand volleyball.
Mm.
So, and there's, you know, that's just not,
that's
not right. So the key is, if you're on scholarship for the indoor game, you can play on the sand. But if you are a sand indoor player, you may not be able to play. If you're a sand beach player, you may not be able to play indoors. Those are the rules that we kind of have to figure out, so that you don't have, now, you know, University of Florida has 20 beach players, so that their indoor team has 20 players.
That's not.
We weren't going to be able to add the sport if it didn't create more opportunities for girls. It can't just be our indoor players have another season to play. That's not why you add the sport. Are there girls in South Florida playing beach volleyball now who could not play on our indoor team? Absolutely. And be good enough to play collegiately on the beach? Absolutely. I keep using beach sand. The NCAA decided we had to use the word sand volleyball only because not everybody has a beach. Whatever. It's still outdoors. So some of us use outdoors, indoors.
Right.
So make sure you guys can follow me on that.
So what would be the difference, you know, for people who don't know volleyball as well, obviously, what makes a great sand player as compared to a hard court player?
Well, it's the same thing that our players are having to learn as well. And the indoor game is all about terminating with one swing. And the harder you hit, you know, the more balls you block, you know, that's how you score points. the beach game, you'll see the hard-driven swings, but not nearly as often. It requires so much more to be great at it, you got to have great court vision. Of course, you could argue you got to have great court vision on the indoor game too. But you are hitting, there are more variety of shots, so many more off-speed shots, and it's just two people covering the entire court. And that's the big difference, just two on a court. And the first time we played in the sand tournament, it was great experience for our players, especially our young ones. You can be a defensive specialist indoors, be one of six, and have a very limited role and kind of stay under the radar. There is no staying under the radar on the sand. If you're not carrying your own weight, that ball is coming to you every single time. It is not an easy sport to play, and everyone thinks because of playing in the sand. Well, yeah, but so are your opponents. You're right. It's difficult to, you know, it's more difficult to jump and move. But what's, you have to be able to, each player has to be able to compete in all six parts of the game. You can't just be a great blocker. You got to be able to serve, pass, set, dig. I mean, you got to be able to do it all. That's why every beach player will tell you that if they took time and they made a run on the sand, they were always a better indoor player afterwards.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. All right. Another thing that you're a big proponent of, moving on from the sand, beach volleyball, and I know, Kyle, this is close to Kyle's heart, Twitter. I know you got on this during the volleyball season. I remember from media day, you took out the phone and you tweeted from that. I just want to talk about how important that is to you, what that, you know, how you sort of got involved in that, and what that's.
Initially, I thought it would be good for recruiting.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure Facebook is good for recruiting,
right.
But I don't think many high school girls are following Twitter. At least not yet.
Mm-hmm.
Who's, you know, when I look sometimes at who's following, you know, Mary Wise on Twitter.
It's Kyle.
It's
a journalist.
It's
me and Kyle.
It's
yeah.
Kyle. It's Gator fans.
Right.
I do like this. A bunch of our former players.
Mm-hmm.
That, I love it because they're getting it directly onto their cell phones. They're paying attention. I love that. During the season, I felt like it was a lot easier because I had something to talk about. It's sort of like, what do I tweet now? Not much. I'm not big on tweeting, you know, what I'm eating for dinner
right.
or
right.
stuff like that. But, you know, I think a way to connect to people and it's kind of like, how often is women's volleyball going to be front page in January, February? Only unless something bad happens. Otherwise, you know, you just or signing date in April. You know, otherwise we're just not in the news mm-hmm. with everything else that's going on, especially a school like Florida with
right.
as many highly successful spring sports. So if it's a way for those of you in sports journalism to kind of pay attention to what we're doing, I think it's good for volleyball.
Well,
it is easy.
We appreciate certainly that you take the time. It's very apparent that it's you
yeah.
getting the tweets.
It
because
is me.
There
it
are
is.
Coaches that, you know, even at the school, we don't have to mention any names, but it's pretty much a PR thing. They're just cranking out releases, links
for
to
sure.
that kind of stuff. You know, they have somebody else who's doing the tweeting for them. Lane Kiffin got in trouble because
right.
they had a violation, and he said, well, I wasn't even tweeting. It was one of my guys, you know, but obviously it's you tweeting on
yeah,
them.
Yeah, so if there's a violation,
it's
I'm
you,
guilty.
It's actually you.
Yeah.
But she showed us a media day, took out the phone, and did it. That,
maybe you should get Sean on
yeah.
there. You can pass the violations off on him.
Yeah, but, there you go. It's pretty easy. What is
right.
it, 147 characters? I mean, it's not that hard.
Right.
And it doesn't take very long. It's, you know, one of the things I've learned – as the head coach, you're always in a you always have to be in a position to promote your sport. I still am not great about running around town wearing Florida volleyball stuff. I thought, okay, there's enough, you know, spotlight. And yet I know if I'm at Publix wearing somebody says Florida volleyball, I'm promoting Florida volleyball.
Mm-hmm.
That's my job.
Mm-hmm.
And so if tweeting, which takes about 30 seconds maybe, to helps promote it, then it's good.
Good answers.
Yeah, yeah.
There you go.
Yeah, Kyle's all about the Twitter, too. He just got on it, so I figured that was going to be close to all of our hearts. But you mentioned not having a lot to tweet about in the off season. What's the off season like for you, especially, you know, sort of close to the end of the postseason?
Well, at this point in time, obviously, a lot of time is spent on player development. But off campus, it's recruiting.
Right.
This is the key recruiting time for volleyball. We don't have, with just two assistants, it's much harder to see players play during the high school season than it is in the club. We can go to a club tournament, and a lot of these tournaments are played in convention centers. They'll have 200 courts set up in a convention center and with all ages, and you can see so many more players over that weekend. So we are on the road constantly during this time, looking at not only players in the 2011 class, but the 2012, 2013. You'd be amazed. Tell you what, if I meet a girl whose parents are tall and pretty well, and I see that their daughter has long arms, big hands, I do not hesitate to say, please get her into volleyball. And you know what's great in Gainesville now? The girls' club has the girls' place that it's called now. They have a Saturday morning league. There are different leagues in Gainesville for, you know, 8, 9, 10 year olds. That wasn't always the case when we first got here. So now when I'm identifying talent, I can actually tell the parents where they can take their daughters to play. I think it's one of the reasons why volleyball in Gainesville has become so popular, because there's a place for girls to play.
Mm-hmm.
How do you get kids interested? Let them play. You know, it really is a fun sport.
And I mean, and you guys have had a lot to do with that directly. Not only you, but Coach Chironis, Nick Chironis, who mm-hmm. you know, helped develop the
Gainesville juniors, right?
So talk a little bit about that process and what that's done for you, because you've had girls to play in
right?
the O-Dome.
Absolutely,
that grew up in Gainesville.
Elise so. Cusack, Marcy Hampton, Kelsey Bowers, to name a few. It started when back in the early 90s with the idea of it being strictly a way to promote Florida volleyball. Maybe we could get some more fans. Nick went out and recruited fathers, brothers, mother, you know, anybody. If you just knew the difference between a volleyball and basketball, he could coach you.
Right.
And he spent all his time coaching coaches with no volleyball background, but got it started. The practices were at Lincoln Middle School, and he spent his time coaching the coaches. And those teams were not necessarily very successful, but at least they were playing. Now you'll fast forward 15 years later, and now what you have are girls playing in our local high schools that started playing when they were younger than 10. They have a 10 and under team. There's a 12s team. There's a 14s. And so they're growing up playing this game. And we see so many girls in this area. Not obviously we've benefited, but you know what? A lot of these girls have too, because they're going on and playing on college scholarships because they're playing volleyball more than 3 months out of the year.
Absolutely.
Mm. All right, let's shift gears here a little bit. Let's talk about something I know you talked about a lot during the regular season. The SEC has improved constantly since you've been here, especially in recent years. What has gone into that? What's made the SEC so much better in recent years?
I think you really have to look first at the coaching and that the schools that have made hires. I remember when Rob Patrick was hired at Tennessee, and Rob had been on the staff at Stanford, won a national championship. You knew Tennessee was going to be good. You know, they went to the Final Four in 2005. I mean, Tennessee will always be good. The only issues they've had was some injuries, but it feels like we all go through those. And they had another great year last year. Kentucky made a great hire. Arkansas, I mean, they're really, really good coaches in this league. And there are more players playing. It used to be the state of Georgia didn't even have a state championship for high school girls volleyball. Well, how are you going to recruit in state? Now they got one of the biggest clubs in the Southeast out of Atlanta. All of our schools, look at the success LSU had last year going into Texas. You want to find we talk about Texas for football. Well, let me tell you, in women's athletics, Texas for volleyball. They have so many great athletes playing that sport there. So you got great coaching, more access to talent. Well, eventually you're going to see the success. And what I see, the difference now is it's sustained success. What was happening earlier is teams would get really good through one great recruiting class, ride that class, and then sort of drop off at the table and have to start all over. So you would see these 4 and 5 year cycles, but in between, not even getting to the NCAA tournament. Mm-hmm. I think we're well past that. I think you're going to see the SEC with year in and year out multiple teams, you know, a lot more than just the two or three that we had in the tournament in the past. I think we're going to be looking at 7, 8+ year in and year out.
What took so long? Because as recently as a couple of years ago, when I was covering it, there were still 5 teams in the SEC who'd never beaten you. You're 50-0 against all these teams in the SEC. What took so long for the competition to catch up? Because you've been winning here, you know, for years, going deep in the tournament, NCAA tournament, doing stuff like that. I mean, why were you able to be so successful and these other programs weren't?
I think it comes down to the talented players. There just weren't as many players to choose from. Hey, we're still
not getting them all.
Yeah, or at least getting the ones from the Southeast.
Right.
We're still not, you know, winning battles, head-to-head battles with Stanford. If a kid's from, you know, Southern California, trying to beat out USC or UCLA is not easy. And many years ago, long before you guys were doing this, it was the talent was all in California. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, guess where the only good schools were? And now you've got great athletes playing all over the United States, and there's more to choose from. Mm-hmm. There's a Penn State, the run they had with 3 consecutive national championships were built on the great player, the player of the year, was from Durham, North Carolina. I'm not sure they even knew what volleyball was 10 years ago in Durham, North Carolina. No one was playing volleyball. And now the player of the year, the setter for that team came out of Michigan. So you get they're coming from not just Southern California.
It's reached the point, schools from out west, Stanford will come get a kid from Florida. What was the girl's name who was on Stanford 2 years ago? She had a really unique
Feluca.
Name.
Feluca. Feluca, yeah. Let me tell you, that one didn't sit too well. But and not just Feluca. The Jan Okaba, who was a senior on Stanford's team, she was from Tampa. Mm-hmm. Feluca was from Fort Lauderdale. You want to tell you what's like a kick to your gut is you get an in-state kid I knew from the get-go, they said if they got accepted to Stanford, they're going there. You know, that's a pretty good gig. You get the degree at Stanford. We understand that. But having said that, we think we got a pretty good deal going here at Florida as well. But back, you know, years ago, we lost players, great high school talent out of the state to a UCLA, and what was used or Stanford used against us was the SEC.
Right.
Is that teams, great players didn't want to come here and play teams whose RPI was over 100 and weren't playing in the NCAA tournament and all. And now the difference is now I mean for years we were recruiting with that huge albatross that we were dealing with. Now I can look at the SEC as an advantage, and if we add sand volleyball, it will be a huge advantage to be in this league.
So maybe getting kids from California to come out a little bit tough, but you've pulled Kelly Murphy is from Illinois,
Chicago,
right? You said you just signed a player from Indiana. Mm-hmm. So obviously you recruit around the nation. Has that been something recently, or have you always
always done that. Gone, obviously trying to recruit the very best talent we can from Florida if that player can help us get to the Final Four, but then not hesitating to recruit from coast to coast. Mm-hmm. Now, do we always get them to visit here? No. There are going to be players who want to a player from Arizona who decides, I may not stay in Arizona, but I'm going to play in the Pac-10. So at least I know twice a year I'm going back home, that type of thing. Mm-hmm. You know, we've never signed a player out of Washington. That's a haul. but it's all about a fit, and that's what you're looking for. And we're okay admitting this program is not for everybody. And we're looking for players that are committed to try and win a national championship. They got to really, really be competitive and want to put that much time and energy into trying to be great.
With the improvement of the SEC, do you think that eventually pays dividends down the road in the postseason, deeper in the postseason, helps prepare you a little bit more?
No question.
Like Kentucky.
I've always maintained we're not going to win a national championship until we've lost an SEC title. Well, we lost the SEC title, so we can go ahead and win that national championship anytime now. Because there were years where we had to go schedule out of conference at Thanksgiving weekend just to get good competition. The 2003 team, the team that went to the national championship match, that went through the SEC, not only did that team not lose a match, they didn't lose a game throughout the entire SEC. And we lost our best blocker in the middle of the season to an ACL injury. Now think about how good that team was to lose your best blocker, your starting middle blocker, to an ACL, and you still don't drop a single game. That's how good we were. We had to schedule out of conference to have any type of competition.
Interesting. One last thing, I guess. This is sort of the question I'm most interested in. You're entering your 20th season come this fall in Florida. How have you seen sort of the sports landscape change at this university during that time?
The volleyball landscape or just...
We can just start with volleyball and then as a whole, since you've been around the athletic program for...
Well, I think the thing that attracted us to Florida in the beginning was the fact that women's athletics on campus was a big deal. Mm-hmm. And that I had been the assistant at UK at the time, and you come down here and they're playing in the O'Connell Center, and you just, the matches even at that time were more of an event. Well, now we've doubled that, tripled that event type atmosphere, you know, with the video boards and the light show and everything. I think the landscape hasn't changed in terms of Florida's commitment to women's athletics. Bar none, the best in the country. We are not the sport where, or the school where we have 40 some odd sports and we give the money and attention to these top two or three sports, and then the rest of you just sort of battling for what's, you know, the pieces left over.
Right.
And I think, you know, that starts at the top. That's Jeremy Foley's commitment to this, to everyone's success. Mm. And I don't doubt for a second that every day Jeremy comes to the office with the mindset, how can I help my coaches be successful? And so the decisions that are made in upgrading the O'Connell Center, helping us with the travel budget lets us play these teams, or the guaranteed budget lets us bring teams in, that hasn't changed. It might be a little different now in terms of, you know, some of the things you have to do, you know, how far you have to go over traveling or recruiting and all. But the commitment to women's athletics, I don't think that's changed at all.
How much of a pressure to win is there here, just not only, you know, within your own sport, but every sport on campus is good. There's not a sport on campus that, you know, is routinely missing the tournament or not doing well. It seems like every sport's competing for a national championship. So, I mean, how much pressure is there to be part of that culture?
I don't think the pressure, real or not, can ever be as much as coaches put on themselves. And so, you know, I've heard, not necessarily volleyball people, but you hear comments in terms of, you know, what a tough place that must be to work at Florida. I think, are you kidding? A tough place? I mean, you have everything you need to be successful here. You have great support in the administration. And that there isn't, I don't have in my contract, I have to win so many matches to keep my job. But at Florida, you have all the resources that if you couldn't be successful, then, you know, I think you'd have to look inward and go, okay, what changes do I need to make? Obviously, we didn't win the SEC. We are definitely looking at making changes, and way disappointed we didn't win the SEC this year. And I think but it's realistic. I don't think our administration is thinking that we should win a national championship every other, you know, it's not, they understand that each sport is different. And that as long as we're graduating our players are treated well, we're competitive, we're spending our time and energies in the right area, then this is a perfect place to play. I think coaches, and I'm not saying here at Florida, but I, you know, people, coaches elsewhere, if you start battling battles that you can't win and you start spending your attention on areas that aren't necessarily going to make your team better, then I think your days are numbered. Mm-hmm. I think that's true of all coaches. And you could probably say true of all professions, all, you know, spend your energy in what's going to make you successful and don't mess with the other stuff. Right. Let it go.
So completely off subject here, but something that from this last season that caught my attention as, you know, just following the team from the outside now, you recently came to an agreement to do a four-team tournament
yes.
For the next few years with Texas, Stanford, and Penn State.
Correct.
Is that right?
Correct.
Which you can't really pick three bigger names in volleyball than those three schools. So talk about how that came to pass and, you know, the structure of that.
Sure. I have to give all credit to the coach at Penn State, Russ Rose. And there was years where Russ chose to schedule, I got to say, very easy, pre-Big Ten. Mm-hmm. I think, and he, as he admitted, he got a lot of flack for it. And I can understand, you have the best player in the country. Your fans want to see you take that best player against the best competition. Mm-hmm. And so he initiated it in the fall. Even before that, I think it was in the summer, where he got in touch with all three schools and asked, would you be interested in a four-year deal? Getting all four schools to agree to the tournament for 4 years, that was the easy part. The format of the tournament was, you had, in Texas, you had a coach that wanted to play it as a classic format, two matches over 2 days. In Stanford, you had a coach that wanted to play three matches in 3 days, play everybody. In Penn State, you had a coach that wanted to play all three teams, but over 2 days. So you played two matches in 1 day. Mm-hmm. So,
and what did the coach in Florida?
The coach in Florida said, "When it's in your backyard, your rules."
Okay.
And
I like
so
that.
I thought that was the answer. And so next year we will host it for the first time, because football is playing at home and it's against South Florida that day. We're going to play it as a classic. We will play one of the teams Friday night, as the in the second match of the evening, and then there will be a consolation and a championship. So we'll actually have a winner in terms of playing it as a classic. I think that's the format that's easiest to sell television. Mm-hmm. And so that's what we're going with.
So it's two matches in 2 days?
Yes, okay. Two matches in 2 days. Penn State's issue, because they play that double round robin, mm-hmm. he doesn't have a whole lot of free dates. You only have 28 dates in volleyball. And so he didn't want to use the 3 dates.
Okay.
Of competition. Mm, that meant right. He wasn't maybe going to play an in-state. Mm-hmm. I don't know who that is.
What?
Penn or something.
Has the format always been that? Well, I thought I heard it first announced. I'm glad that it's this way, because
yeah.
I really like – I get a little upset when people call it a tournament and you play one team and go home or whatever.
Yeah,
it is.
Right.
So here you're going to have a winner, which
yes.
is exciting, and
yes.
you get to play two great teams.
That's
no matter
right.
what.
No matter what.
But yeah. It's still leaving one school, you know, one team, one match on the table.
Right.
But you know what? If the
that's okay, though.
If the compromise, I mean, if you pick any of those three schools and having to play two of those three on the same day, I mean. We don't have the horses to do that. I don't think any of those teams, maybe the Penn State team the past 2 years,
right.
they did. Maybe, because they really didn't have, they had great starters just, and they had a zero bench. What Penn State benefited from, having the best talent in the country that stayed healthy.
Mm-hmm.
They were one ankle sprain away from falling out.
So obviously, you know, these four teams are four of the best, but was it done with a regional consciousness too, or did it just work out that way where you have a team from?
No, I think Russ is, you know, he was the one who contacted all three schools, and
mm-hmm.
it was done regional. I think he also did it. He wasn't going to, you know, if he didn't like them, fortunately,
right.
yeah. you know, Russ has beat me enough times, he doesn't hate me. So so that's why we were asked to be on the schedule.
Right.
Yeah.
I guess the last thing, just sort of a thing for the fans to look forward to for the next season, just a little bit of a preview of what you're looking forward to out of your players, out of the team, sort of some players to watch out for entering the
sure.
next season.
I think the player who's really shining right now with the red shirt off is Chloe Mon.
Mm-hmm.
Chloe is an Eastside graduate who is now jump reaching almost 10-5. That's 5 inches above the top of a rim. And she is our highest jumper right now. 4 years of eligibility, she really is making a ton of progress. The changes that are, you know, as those who follow volleyball know, Colleen Ward has decided to transfer and go back closer to home, left a huge void in our team in terms of not only kill production, but serve, receive, and defense. So we are definitely recruiting now for the 2010 class that we didn't expect to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And as such, we're looking international. So our team may look have an international feel to it that it hasn't had. I will tell you this. I don't know exactly what the roster will look like now speaking to you in early February, what it'll look like in August. But I can tell you that it's really been fun meeting these international players. There's a different maturity level of somebody who's willing to go so far from home, English as a second language in some cases, and the experience they have. So Colleen's departure was a huge loss for us. But obviously we want her to be happy, and her being homesick is something that we just can't resolve from Chicago to Florida.
How do you deal with that? Because, I mean, you lost Colleen Ward, and Cindy Badhel did a similar thing.
Yes.
Back to Colorado,
right,
close to home. How prevalent is that, and how combat that as a coach? That's got to be really tough to deal
well,
with.
Well, it's a great question, Colin. I'll tell you that it has certainly kind of changed how the discussions I'm having with the parents in recruiting.
Right.
In both cases, I think the parents had a harder time with the daughter being away mm-hmm. than the daughter did. And what I've learned, I just was real lucky, I guess, for so many years. Parents, even, you know, we've had players from all over the country, and the parents were great about it. But if the parents have a hard time with their daughter leaving, right, I can't win that battle. They're better recruiters than I am. So it's, you know, it's a great learning process for me. Every player is different. Every family is different. But that's something that I've learned from. I will have those open discussions. And because what I've said is, you know, how are you about going this far away from home? And I've asked the parents, are you going to be okay? I might ask a few more probing questions
yeah,
of the parents.
Yeah.
And you know what the other thing is? They may think they're going to be okay.
You don't really know.
You don't know. Mm-hmm. That's right. And you know, I look in Colleen's case. She has brothers and sisters that never left home.
Mm.
So it's not. It was so unusual for her.
And that was a situation too, where I mean, her and Kelly had played in high school together. Mm-hmm. So maybe didn't see that coming.
No. When she walked in the office, did not see it coming.
Right.
It was a huge surprise, because normally what you see if a player is unhappy, which her being homesick caused, it would manifest itself somewhere, on
right.
the court, in mm-hmm. workouts, in class. But that wasn't Colleen's personality. She was such a hard worker. I think she just decided, I can just, you know, work my way through it, and then realize she's halfway done with her career. Mm-hmm. And so she has only 2 years left. Again, a great kid. She will be missed, but we're going to be okay. We're going to be okay. It just means I'm working a whole lot harder on recruiting for 2010. Than I would have wanted.
Right. A lot more time on Facebook, on Twitter.
Yeah, yeah. Although let me tell you, the international players, it's not
all.
A lot more time learning different languages. How about that?
It's true.
One more thing. You talk about the different, you know, types of players, different types of girls that you get in. I know you're probably sick of answering questions about this, but you have two girls on your team, Callie Rivers and Mariah Woodson, whose fathers are professional basketball coaches.
Yeah, how about that? Irony.
Yeah, I mean, what are they a little bit different coming from the type of families that
they're a little different, I'll tell you. This much I can tell you. Callie Rivers may be the most competitive player I have ever coached. And we've coached some pretty competitive ones. And trying to bottle that competitiveness, she and I have literally butted heads along the way. But I'll tell you what, if I'm in a battle, I want that girl on my side. And I think she has such a great appreciation for great competitors. Having been around the talent and looking at the success that the Celtics have had, you know, of recent years that her dad has been there, she can, I mean, those are dinner conversations they have. And their best player is their most competitive player. Well, Callie can see that, how good that is. In terms of Mariah's case, that's just pure coincidence. It wasn't like Doc had talked to Mike and they had worked that out. What
that's
happened?
That's a feud, by the way.
That's like, exactly right. I don't know if they're talking at all.
Yeah. Yeah.
But in Mariah's case, she came to volleyball very late. She was late in her high school career. We saw a good athlete who, at the beginning stages of volleyball, she had not signed late in her senior year. We talked to her about recruiting. And when I did that home visit, and it was Mariah and her parents, I did it as if I was trying to talk her out of coming. I painted such an awful picture. This is how hard this is going to be. You're going to be the most inexperienced player on the court. You're going to have the hardest time. And I went through all this, and I go, you still want to come? And she said yes. And Mike said and talked about how competitive Mariah is, and that he said she is more like me than she is her mother. Her mother's a wonderful person. Mike, of course, was the bull, you know, at IU and the MBA. And I thought, okay, Mariah, we'll give you a chance. But in terms of, it's more of an irony than anything else.
Right.
Kind of interesting. It's been fun to get to know both families, but they do live a different lifestyle than most of us. Okay, all of us.
Anything else, Kyle?
I think that's it.
Anything else you wanted to talk
about?
No,
I appreciate you guys coming in and talking about volleyball in early February.
Thanks so much for sitting down with us. We really appreciate it. It's great to have someone who's been around Florida so long.
Done so very long. I know what you're thinking.
Well, you got the job as a very young coach. Right. So
the first job, I was very young.
I think you were still young when you took over at Florida for a head coach. Right. But
yeah, like Kyle said, we couldn't appreciate this anymore. Thanks for coming on and doing this. Thanks to Sean Cartel, our favorite SID in the country, for setting all this up. If you have any feedback for this, send it to podcast@alligator.org. We'll forward it to Coach Wise or to anybody else who needs to hear it in the Gator Volleyball program. So thanks for listening.